It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. Today is Monday, November 24th, 2025, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 360 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am one of your hosts, Mac, and I am joined by a special guest host today, a returning guest, returning pal, returning nerd, Metzgirl. Metzgirl, how you doing today?
Hey, Maction, I'm doing great.
Oh, let's not be so formal. You can just call me Mac.
So sorry. You used my full name. Whatever.
That's right.
No, I'm doing all right. It's been a decent November for me overall, and I'm ready for the holiday to be here.
Yeah. Holiday, yes indeed. Speaking of which, I do have an important question for you. I'm sure you already have plans, but best pie for this season?
It has to be pumpkin.
Pumpkin? See, I'm a sweet potato pie man.
Okay. I can get behind some sweet potato pie. I just hate peeling and chopping sweet potatoes, personally.
Mm.
But I also don't peel and chop a pumpkin, so I don't know why that's a thing. I could just buy a can of sweet potatoes.
You can also buy a pre-made sweet potato pie as well, although that does seem a little sacrilegious.
Ah,
I know. What a world. Now, I was actually planning on maybe trying to get out of town for a bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it looks unfortunately, though, the places that I'd like to go, the weather's going to be a little bit rough out here. So
same.
we're just gonna hang. And I'm looking forward to it, though. Going to spend some time with some good people probably on Saturday. But that's about all the Thanksgiving plans I've got going.
Oh, I'm hosting 20 people at my house, so it's going to be a lot. I'm hosting the whole fam. It's my folks and my hub's folks and all his fam. So it'll be a lot, but it'll be good. It was a lot for my first time last year, so now I feel like I kind of have a feeling for what to expect, so that should be good.
Well, I do, of course, wish you luck in the hosting. You'll crush it, of course, and they will tell the story of this Thanksgiving for many years to come. Of that, I have no doubt.
The bard shall regale the world with my tales.
Yes.
It'll be great.
Well, Metzgirl, I was hoping that in this show you might do us a kindness and fill in for Lom, who is parts elsewhere, elsewhile, and, you know, share with us some of the video game news that you've run into.
Yeah, so last week y'all were talking about the new Steam machine that everybody's, well, I shouldn't say they're all excited. We have some very mixed reviews for various people who, whether you're on the yay, a easy to connect to my TV thing that I don't have to worry about setting up, or you're on the I could just have my own computer, whatever side you're on. It does have a price tag now. Sounds like it's going to selling for about $750.
Okay.
Which is higher than the rest of the consoles that currently exist. However, we're talking higher specs for the actual being able to play games. And I think it's well within the current console pricing. As far as it's slightly more expensive, but at the same time, we're talking a Steam machine. So like I trust them a heck of a lot more than I trust Xbox or PlayStation to do a good job with putting a thing together that is solidly built and can continue to function with minimal intervention from me as the owner of said device. I think it sounds promising. What do you think about a $750 console, though?
Well, so I think the general overall trend, and I know this is something that I mentioned a little bit, and maybe I didn't say it too well last episode, but the general trend of making video games more playable on Linux is a great plus for me. Every yes. time I think about this, I think about another guest, a certain Sam's a lot, and how excited he would be at this, you know, enthusiastic march toward Linux gaming.
Yes.
But also, one of the things that's very problematic, and I know you are an absolute techno wizard,
sure.
but Metzgirl, you're absolutely a tech wizard. I'm just sort of a dabbler. I'm that guy in the family that people know is good at computers, so they call him up to troubleshoot their printer. I understand that part of what makes Windows very fiddly is the fact that there is so much different manufacturers, devices, things hodgepodge together. Is that fair?
Yeah. I actually had a friend who talked about Windows Vista was actually really good. It was just that nobody was ready for it, and so nothing worked with it, and that's why Windows Vista failed. And I was like, I don't know about that. But as far as like all of the things that people expect to work on Windows and for the amount of time they expect it to work, yes, absolutely, those are major issues to be handled by. They could handle it a heck of a lot better, but they keep firing everybody that knows what they're doing. So,
and the QA teams as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's no... You are the QA now. Congratulations, yeah. General public.
Yay! Alpha testing!
So, like, I trust Steam a lot more with their Steam OS and the fact that it is a Linux kernel base. Not that Windows isn't as well now, but that Linux kernel base and being able to allow people to do their own, like, if they want to mod it, they can. But why in the world would you buy a console that is supposed to be essentially a plug-and-play device and then mod it? I don't know. People do weird
okay.
things. But
now, hold on. Let's not say things we can't take back. I'm a proud member of the console modding brigade. However, that those are in the past. These new things are a lot more full-featured. Though I will say the thing that makes me mention the parts and the mishmash of things that makes Windows rough is exactly one of the things that I'm excited for about this Steam machine, because it will be a large install base of roughly identical yeah. hardwares all on the same Steam OS that almost guarantees a reasonable lifespan of not just the hardware, but also the support of the hardware from the software, which we, of course, you know, we have that as well in the Steam Decks, or Steam's Deck, perhaps. Maybe that's the correct pluralization. English is weird. But because of so many Steam's Deck with all of the, you know, with all of the hardware being the same, point being is that I'm excited not so much for any one reason, but just the overall trend. And,
sure.
you know, $700-ish dollars, like you said, that does sound fairly apace with what we're seeing in other consoles.
Don't get me wrong. I think paying more than $500 for a console is dumb.
Agreed.
But at the same time, if we're expecting the kind of experience and gameplay that people seem to expect, maybe that's what's necessary anymore for building a piece that will can actually, I don't know, I'm not like able to price things directly from China and figure out the manufacturing mm-hmm. cost. Like, that is not my brain. I don't get it. But I yeah, so anyway, that's the price of Steam. And there's also, we have Simpson skins in Fortnite right now, right?
I beg your pardon?
Okay. We have Simpson skins in Fortnite. And one of them is breaking new ground. Any guesses as to what that new ground is for a skin in Fortnite?
I'm gonna guess Marge Simpson's extraordinarily tall hair. It's the tallest one ever. Okay. somebody... Nope. first thought, best thought. What is it?
Homer Simpson is shirtless, and you can see his nipples. First ever skin to have nipples in Fortnite.
And it is Homer Simpson.
Yep. I mean, they're literally just little brown dots.
We've seen Homer Simpson with his shirt off in the cartoon before. Uh-huh. I know what to expect. But also, what a bizarre world we live in.
Right?
How interesting.
I pulled that from IGN, by the way, in case you were wondering.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just pulling this out of nowhere. It was that was just one of those wild, like, okay, that's a choice. I don't know why that's a thing, but whatever.
Sometimes I wonder about these deals and, like, how much they pay to license the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, obviously, did Disney or Fox, wholly owned subsidiary of Disney, or The Simpsons Co., wholly owned subsidiary of Fox, wholly owned subsidiary of Disney. It's all three companies in a trench coat. Did they approach Epic, wholly owned subsidiary of Tencent? one too many. Or did Fortnite, did the Fortnite folks approach Disney?
I don't know. It's pretty wild what they end up with in Fortnite in general, like just all of the skins. But at the same time, it's just nipples we got, it was Homer.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I thought for sure it would have been some of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. Got lots of shirtless dudes running around.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Bringing it back to the real world a little bit. Xbox now has, you know, they had their body wash. I don't know if you heard about this.
No. Body wash? And I've been washing my body with normal soap like a sucker?
Yeah, you could have been using Xbox body wash this whole time. And deodorant.
Shut up. There's deodorant too?
That was 2019, my dude. That was a while ago.
Look, 2019 was an interesting time for me. The podcast had to take a multi-month break because I was living in a national park at the time. There's a whole... 2019 was a whole thing, so I think I completely missed that. And
okay.
I don't think people recognize just how much of a conduit to the goings-on Lom, and of course you by being here, is for me. I would know nothing about gaming news if it wasn't for what I get here from kind people showing me the way. So thank you.
Okay, so anyway, that was a thing. I honestly have not actually seen it IRL, so I'm not sure if it was just an online order thing. But now, the next step is the Croc, of course. So now you can get Xbox-branded Crocs just in time for your stocking stuffers for this year. They're only $80.
I thought that this could not get more ridiculous. And then, in today's episode of Crossovers Nobody Asked For, Xbox Crocs.
I would never purchase them, but they made me giggle. And so I thought I would bring attention to their ridiculousness.
There is a part of me that wants to put this under Mr. Nice Guy's tree. It's just mystery present, Xbox branded, waiting for him. Just, there is a part. There is a part.
But then you would need all of the reaction shots just to see what he would do.
I am quite sure that I could get the rest of the Nice Guy household involved. Lom, please quit listening to this episode. How dare you? We're plotting. Thanks for a truly unique and incredible round of news, Matt's girl. I don't know exactly how to follow that, but why don't I try with some video game history, some interesting things that have happened this week in years before, some of which may have been somewhat impactful. Now, Matt's girl, were you a Super Nintendo or a Sega Genesis girl?
Oh, Super Nintendo. Earthbound had me.
This week, the launch of the Super Nintendo.
Woohoo.
And of course, all the accompanying launch titles. There are, though, I was a Genesis guy. So this last week in 92, Sonic the Hedgehog 2. But to be fair, I wasn't a Sega Genesis guy because of choice. Like, we got an NES for Christmas one year, and then that was the first and last console that was ever purchased. Everything else I had to get on my own. So in the mid-90s, I wound up buying a Sega Genesis at a yard sale, with games and such. And Mr. Nice Guy and I have gone back and forth about this. I've told him about like the way it went down, and he's pretty convinced, and he's convinced me as well, that what happened was somebody misbehaved and their parents put out their Sega Genesis and everything else at the yard sale. I was the recipient of that good fortune for me, terrible fortune for someone else.
Maybe they were just selling their Sega Genesis to go buy a Super Nintendo. You never know.
No, because Genesis does what Nintendo don't. You're right, I do never know. Maybe. A couple of other really cool things, like in 1998, the release on the Nintendo 64 of Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Ooh, that's solid Zelda.
Solid Zelda. And of course, obviously, regularly makes most best of, you know, lists.
Uh-huh.
Top 10, top 20 games of all time, personally.
Sounds right.
And when it came out, my interaction with it was primarily because I didn't have a Nintendo 64. See earlier explanation. But I was able to participate because my best friend, who lived across the street from me, he had a Nintendo 64 and Ocarina of Time, and so, like, I would draw maps and, like, navigate for him Aww. While he played, because he was better. It was great. And to this day, I attribute my ability to navigate a city, to read a map, to those amazing days in 98 enjoying this game.
I mean, I attribute my map reading to Girl Scouts, but you do you.
In theory, I have my orientation merit badge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember a lick of that.
Oh.
It's really all about Ocarina of Time for me. Let's see. 2004 was a good year, though. Or was it 2005, though?
Oh, 2005, as in November 22nd, when the Xbox 360 was introduced?
Whoa.
20 years ago today?
Mm. Amazing.
Well, on the 22nd, I should say. Not today.
But this week, for today's episode's purposes, of course. The 360 on episode 360.
I was not an Xbox girly at the time.
Mm.
I was solidly in the Nintendo / PC world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my friends were talking about the Red Ring of Death, I just was like, see, that's what you get. You went with the Xbox, so now you're stuck with the Red Ring of Death. I don't know what to tell you. You should have stuck with Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. The Xbox 360, to me, is one game, and that is Left 4 Dead.
Okay.
And just, you know, it's what we always used it for. I went halvesies on a 360 with my cousin so that we could have another console.
Sure, yeah.
In order to play System Link and play together. Great times. Great times.
Just recently, my husband has a 360 still, I think, in the basement. And he had games for it for Fable 1, 2, and 3.
Mm.
And so I had surgery and I was laid up for a while. And so I finished Fable 3. And, like, it feels very old school, but it has such, like, all of the things that are, like, now available in video games, like being able to hook up with the barmaid, like, it's a thing in Fable, and I'm apparently that's where it began, and I was just mind blown, you know, that RPGs can have those kind of pieces to it is really interesting.
One last one before we leave history, released in 2007 for the PS3, a little game called Rock Band, a game that I remember costing something like $170 back in the day in order to get the game and get the guitars and drums and such. Like, it was truly an experience, especially at the time. Now, I have some fond memories of playing Rock Band. Metz Girl, was that a game that you got a chance to play back in the day?
No, I didn't get to play Rock Band. I had... No, I didn't have any friends with the console, I think was my problem. And then by the time I was interested in it, it was kind of nobody cared anymore. But that was several years later.
I never got to. There was a place in my town that that did actual rock band competitions, and so I didn't participate. However, my spouse did win a spirited rock band tournament, I believe, with Hit Me With Your Best Shot by Pat Benatar.
That is objectively the best song in the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, we pay tribute, of course, to this and so many other things. That's what I had for gaming history today.
Woohoo! So, topic of the week. I don't know if you've heard, but Call of Duty Black Ops 7 has been accused of using AI for various pieces of artwork within, like, like the different little badges that you get. Now, they say they used AI to, like, generate concepts and, like, to put things together, and they never intended for it to be in the game proper.
Oh yeah, these are just placeholders.
And they never intended them to really be released, but you know, there's just so much. They did get some in there. Oops, sorry. But apparently there's also potentially AI voice acting as well. That's also mixed in with stuff that other, like, humans have put together and drawn and acted and what have you. So the topic of the week then is, what, if any, role should AI have in the creation of video games beyond the AI that's, like, controlling characters, like the little NPC stuff? That's been around for ages. That can stay. But, like, the AI-generated artwork, voices, the creative type stuff that goes into video games. What are your thoughts?
An amazing topic. Something that I don't think we can properly drill into within the confines of not just the little topic of the week, but also the entire dang hour of a normal record time. I don't think we could do. My thoughts? If you've listened to this show a time or two before, you've probably heard me take a less than enthusiastic approach to AI. It does a very good job of what it was programmed to do, and that was plagiarize. It does a very poor job of what people think it can do, which is synthesize.
Right.
And that's probably the shortest thing about what my impressions are of it as a creative endeavor. However, I do want to say, as a practical matter, it is pretty well established that, in the United States at least, an AI creation is not something that can be included and protected as a copyrightable work. So any bits and bobs that you put out there that are, you know, AI artwork, you can't object when somebody wholesale snags that.
Okay.
Now,
so this goes along with it. In Japan, there is a person who put together an AI artwork that he says he put through 20,000 different prompts to get to the point of this art piece that he is now suing, I think. Sorry, let me pull up the article I found.
Somebody came prepared with articles. You ask me for my opinion and you come with facts. Okay. I feel personally attacked.
This starts with, police in Japan have accused a man of unauthorized reproduction of an AI-generated image. Which is a wild fucking sentence. Sorry. It's just a wild sentence to begin with, because an AI-generated image being reproduced should not be the case of any sort of legal procedure, in my mind. But now we potentially have legal precedents of, at least in Japan, AI imagery being copyrighted to a certain person because they used so many prompts to get to the place where it was a thing. Like, do we then allow, if that's true, then AI-generated things within a video game would also be covered, or does having AI in the video game automatically invalidate your copyright?
Not a lawyer, and definitely not a lawyer in Japan, but my understanding of the intellectual property law as it currently stands, if you used AI in your overall work, the components that were AI generated are not covered by the copyright. You, as a creative individual, by making something, whether or not you register it, you are given the rights to copy, distribute, reproduce, you know, derivatize. But it is currently held and is likely to continue to be that AI is not capable of creation, and therefore nothing can be, you know, created, and therefore nothing is creative, and so therefore nothing is copyrightable. So, like, you know, if I wanted to take the AI assets that showed up in, say, Black Ops 7's, you know, little cards that they've got going around, you know, boohoo, too bad, so sad for them, as long as I didn't take the things that weren't AI, or the maybe AI voices, I could go ahead and, you know, have at those. I could probably straight up pull those audio files and use them in whatever I wanted. And as long as they were AI, they wouldn't be, don't take legal advice from a podcast, don't take legal advice from a Mac.
I personally think it's a really dangerous area to start going down as a company, because at the moment you allow your creative types to slip in AI generated content, you're running into legal matters of like, well, how much of the game is AI? And then how much can we copyright? And then, like, it's a huge gray area without any legal precedent, which, I mean, somebody's going to have to break that seal eventually. But I personally, as the owner of a company who was putting out major line games, would absolutely be, I would be just ashamed to know that my people are putting out AI anything. Like, what am I paying
Metz
you
girl,
for?
Metz girl, you feel shame. You are not...
I wouldn't be a CEO. Yep, that's true.
The largest line item on the budget is personnel. Mm-hmm. And those artists that went to school, who have families to feed, we gotta pay them money. You know who we don't have to pay money? Or have to pay incredibly small amounts of money? The computer-generated plagiarism machine. It's a cost saving.
Except, you do have to pay them. It's just not in your line items, necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like, we're paying for them through electricity price hikes. We're paying for them through our water price hikes and all of the data centers that are going up. But that's all distributed cost, and so it's not directly on the company. But also, you're also opening yourself up to a lot of huge backlash from people in general. Like, people are, when they first, like, spotted some of the AI stuff, they were like, that's that Studio Ghibli art that the, because there was an AI that specifically was making things that looked like Studio Ghibli. And so, like, people were like, I'm not playing your game now. And I know my husband was a Black Ops player and he has stopped playing. So, like, I think that the backlash, if we apply pressure as players and we're like, no, we don't want your AI slop in our games. We want games to be actually fun and entertaining and not just more AI lifeless junk that we can get anywhere else. Like, if I'm going to pay $90 for a game, you had better have put time into it to actually make it a good game. I'm done paying you AAA companies $90 a game when you have just used AI to do it. Anyway, I don't like generative AI at all.
Not a big fan. And also, from a practical standpoint, I also think it's short-sighted. But, like...
Oh, for sure.
I don't know how the sales are doing for Black Ops 7, but I have a vague recollection of hearing that Black Ops 7 has been performing poorly in comparison to previous installments in the franchise, sales performance-wise. So
I'm sure there's a number of factors. Maybe that's a component. There. Yeah, I know that's probably one of them because, like I said, well, and they apparently they snuck in. Basically, they changed Black Ops 6 into Black Ops 7, basically, because there was a 90 gigabyte download that would like Black Ops 6 was still on our Xbox, right? And so then when I went to turn on the Xbox one day, it was trying to download a 90 gigabyte update for Black Ops, and I was like, I thought there was a new game coming out, and he's like, oh yeah, they're basically giving us the beta testing and then they'll release the full game. And I was just like, that's a way to do it.
Certainly is.
Call of Duty, like, it's also just a terribly toxic community to be in, so I generally avoid them.
Now that we've lost 70% of our listeners.
So sorry.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we'll talk about this more in the future.
It's not going away anytime soon.
No.
Generative AI has been unleashed upon the world, and we don't have any regulations or guidelines or guardrails around it. So companies are going to do what companies are going to do, and we have to vote with our dollars. That's all we got.
Yep.
Yay!
On that note, I want to share with you something that maybe we can vote with our dollars. It's a little thing we call Kick or Kickstart, where it's a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. Now, I'm going to go ahead and send you a link to a project. Do not immediately laugh at the obviousness of what's going on right here. A quick shout out to listener Megamole for sending this project my way. This project comes from Bitbeam Cannon, an indie studio, and they recently published their first Sega Genesis game called Demon Claw. This is called Metal Mac, and it is, shall we say, legally distinct Mega Man for the Mega Drive. Things, for example, Professor Proton instead of Dr. Light, Rust instead of Rush the dog. And so on. There are some very small differences, like, for example, in this, although it does look a lot like Mega Man, you can do a sort of, you know, Super Mario Brothers style, you know, headbutt from beneath on some characters, almost as if, you know, you had like a metal helmet on or what have you. Now, the game itself, they're looking at $15 for a Steam key on release, $65 if you wanted a physical Mega Drive / Sega Genesis cartridge, and they're also putting out the game for Neo Geo, so $300 to $375 for a Neo Geo cartridge, whether you've got the arcade Neo Geo or the home console Neo Geo, which is a lot more money, objectively. However, it is, you know, it's those things are expensive, the Neo Geo stuff.
Yeah.
One thing that is interesting is that the Steam and the Neo Geo release is set to be July of 2027, and the cartridge is set to release for March of 2027. So I don't think they say it in the campaign itself, but that seems to indicate that the plan is to release first for the Genesis and then release for PC and Neo Geo, you know, later on down the road. Like many Kickstarters, they did a sort of limited first-come Kickstarter slots, which got them over their $20,000 funding goal, which they're now sitting at somewhere about $27,000 or so, with still 30 days to go. Like I said, legally distinct Mega Man. I think that's fair. But Metzgirl, I have really just droned on. Anything jump out at you from your observation?
Why, though? Like, we already have Mega Man. Why do we... What does this...
We arguably have 11 of them.
Yeah, like, what difference does this one make that they felt the need to kickstart it?
I'm a huge fan of the genre, and I feel like more Mega Man is even better. However, even I am a little bit not convinced. There was, in fact, a Mega Man for the Sega Genesis. It's called The Wily Wars. And it was like Mega Man's 1, 2, and 3, and a little, you know, a few other things. obviously you have to change some things up, but I hope you can sort of see in the visual thing, I feel like the character, the main character, Metal Mac, needs to have more animation in his sprite. The movement does not appear very fluid. It's something they could certainly make some improvements on. Who knows? Maybe they will make improvements between now and release in March 2027, which is at this point, you know, 14 months away. No, 16 months away. I don't think looks all that impressive. To echo your refrain, why though?
Yeah. I'm not seeing anything on this page that tells me that, like, it's a different story or it's a different... It's not quite just recoloring sprites, but...
There's a couple of enemies that have mustaches now.
But, oh, that makes a complete difference. Sign me up. Let's go.
Obviously, they hit all the right marks by making it a Mega Man-like game, because that appeals to me. Mm-hmm. Naming it Mac?
Yeah.
You better believe that appeals to me. And I mean this with all the love of my heart. I would actually have to try the game myself. And a playable demo is the way you do that, and this doesn't have one. So as much love as I may have, as much immediate enjoyment of the concepts, I have to say kick instead of kickstart, because, you know, you've given me nothing that I can actually try. And in a world like today's, what I need is something that I can get my hands on and try out. And I don't think anybody should kickstart a project without some version of a playable demo for what's going on, just to prove that people have the skills to make it happen. So,
yeah, this feels like somebody was like, hey, I really like Mega Man. I would like to code a game that kind of looks like that. And then they got their friends together and they were like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And then they got to the Kickstarter and then they convinced a whole bunch of people that that was a good idea.
So far, you are describing like some of my personal aspirations.
Right. Like,
I could see me doing this.
Right.
Except I would have a playable demo.
It is not for me. This is definitely a kick for me. I'm sorry. All due respect, because I understand that building a video game is not an easy task.
Mm-hmm.
It's a no for me, dog.
Yeah, we wish Bitbeam Cannon all the best. We want everybody on Kickstarter to succeed. But, you know, for these reasons and more, we just say kick instead of kickstart. Good luck in your future endeavors.
Yes.
Well, now we come to the fun trivia part of the show, where our old friend, the Trivia Test Bank, tries to stump us. You know, we call this Nerdflex. A woo-hoo.
I've forgotten the musical stings. I apologize.
No, that's okay. It's all part of the fun.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Splice that in as necessary.
Do we want to do it again?
And now it's time for Nerdflex.
A woo-hoo. Yeah. Well done. Take us away. What does the Trivia Bank have for us today?
Metal Gear Solid. What creatures does the Pain cover himself with and use as weapons?
Okay. Metal Gear Solid, it's a wild, crazy, ridiculous game. I'm going to say jellyfish. He covers himself in jellyfish and uses them as weapons. What do you think?
Sounds as good of a guess as anything. I've never played Metal Gear Solid. I would say porcupines.
Ooh.
But jellyfish is also good. But we were both wrong. It's hornets.
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 Of course. Well, okay, that's okay. We'll get it back.
Ooh, okay. Nintendo. What was the name of the prototype Nintendo brought to the 1984 CES? Consumer Electronics Show.
Okay, I know this one.
You do know this one?
I do.
Okay.
I have been to the Consumer Electronics Show, not back in the 90s, but or the 80s or what have you, but had a great time. Anyway, it would have been the Nintendo AVS, which I believe stood for Advanced Video System.
Indeed, the Advanced Video System. It wasn't even Nintendo.
Now, I actually have a replica version of the AVS that I have here. It's that weird wedge-shaped Nintendo that plays HDMI.
Oh.
It's how I experienced Princess Tomato and Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom.
Correct, yes. And all of the terrible puns in that game.
All of the glorious, glorious food puns. but yeah, all right. 1-1-1.
Okay. Zelda, who is Link's rival in Skyward Sword?
Oh, I should know this because I have played and beaten Skyward Sword. Yeah, but I don't know the name either.
I can see it.
I'm gonna say Waluigi. I know it's wrong, but wouldn't it be hilarious?
It's something dumb. I...
Mark?
Do not know. Groose! I knew it was something dumb.
Well...
It doesn't make any sense. But, yep, I see him in my brain anyway.
Well, hey, at least we got 1 out of 3. And that's not bad. It's not bad.
We didn't completely fall on our faces.
No. We got it. Ah, well, and do remember that if you're here for the live recording, twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod, you can be the one to stump us. Submit your nerdia trivia questions when we get to that point in the show, and we'll try guessing them live. But now, we move on to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
Doesn't remember the musical stings, she says.
I remember that one.
All right, so just a quick review, recap, if you will, on everybody's favorite intellectual property law. Metzgirl, I appreciate you setting this up earlier for us.
Oh, yay.
So obviously, like I said, intellectual property rights, they're afforded to you for having created something and gives you the right to copy, distribute, adapt, display, perform your arts, your works of art as you see fit. And we have 3 general buckets of things that we protect. We use patents to protect hardware and software. Good example, the headphones you are listening with, they're probably covered by a hardware patent. And that lasts for 20 years from the date of filing. You might be playing a video game, such as, I don't know, maybe Silksong. It's covered under copyright. And that lasts from 95 years of publication or 120 years from creation, whichever comes first. You can have copyright protections over the source code of the video game. They consider that to be kind of like a literary novel. You can have the gameplay itself be copyrighted sort of in the same way that a film is. It is an artistic expression manifestation, and so it's a lot like a film is how they consider it. And of course, as we know, mechanics, themes, and genres aren't copyrightable, period, even though some things do slip through, although that's mostly with software patents. We're coming back to it, I promise. Pokemon, it's a name, it's a series. Covered by trademark, 10-year blocks, renewable as many times as you care to do so. Metzgirl, you've seen these things in action once or twice. But Metzgirl, have you ever heard of anybody losing a copyright or a patent or trademark or something?
Paris Hilton was denied "that's hot" as a turn of phrase to be copyrighted.
Amazing. Please tell me more. What happened?
They basically said you can't just copyright that. That's too bland of a phrase.
Everybody was already using it, maybe.
Yeah, you can say "that's hot." It's not like something you can copyright because it's, oh, that's hot. Yeah, the stove is hot. Spices are hot.
But what about if, like, "that's hot" is essential to my brand? Won't you let me trademark it?
No.
Because "that's hot" is me?
No.
Okay.
It is too vague of a phrase. Like, if there was something specific about your whatever you were selling that, like, being hot was part of the thing, maybe? But just generally calling things hot is not something you can copyright.
Well, tell you what, let's live in a world for a moment. In a world where Paris Hilton should not have gotten "that's hot." But yet, she was awarded that.
Mm-hmm.
She could still lose it.
Right.
But it would take a little something like somebody going to court.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
another way. Mm-hmm. And it's very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Court's incredibly expensive. There is also another way that you can do it as well. Or there was, and maybe is not going to be anymore.
Okay.
It's a thing called inter partes review. It's a process by which if you, Mets girl, see that I, Paris Hilton, have been granted something recently or have had it renewed in the past 9 months, and you know that it's either not original or maybe something super obvious, say in the case of a hardware patent, or maybe, I don't know, switching mounts in a video game, something like that. If you've seen it, this process allows anyone to submit a request to reevaluate that patent.
Okay.
And you, as just anybody off the street, can fill out the form. You can provide evidence of it having already existed, proving that it's either super obvious or not original.
Sure.
And then you can submit that off with money. They are going to charge you money for it. But arguably way too much money, in my opinion, but less than the hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars that it would take to actually pony up a lawsuit against me, mm-hmm. millionaire Paris Hilton.
Right.
Like I said, it does cost a lot of money. $23,000 for up to 20 items in a single inter parte review.
Gotcha.
But spare change in comparison to what a lawsuit costs.
Oh, for sure.
And that's been in place since 2013 or so, 2012, 2011, right in there, in the early 20-teens. So what's going on, though, is that the people over the patent office still think that that is too easy and have proposed the following changes. Number one, they want to change this process to say that if you submit one of these, you lose, you never get to challenge the patent at trial.
Mm.
Which, not a fan. I'm not a fan of any of these things. They also want to change it so that no matter how many people submit and pay the money to have one of these inter parte reviews, that only one will ever be heard. The first one. So the first person who complains, that's the only person whose things they'll consider. They'll never consider any other, even if there's better evidence. Who knows?
So if Joe Schmo comes with absolute bunk for their attempt,
uh-huh.
and that's the only one they listen to,
mm-hmm.
you're toast. You don't get a chance.
Exactly.
That's dumb.
Agreed. Number three, there is already a trial likely to get underway, we won't even consider your IPR, your inter parte review. I
get that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one they want to change is that they won't even consider a second inter parte review even if the previous one submitted has clear errors. So even if the previous one was terrible and defective from the beginning, they still won't consider secondary ones. So as a collective, I think we can reasonably interpret this to be, it sure stinks to let normies have access. We gotta limit this thing down as much as possible, which is why I wanted to talk about it. I know it's dry, it's not very interesting, but in a sane world, before you change processes, as an organization in the government, you are supposed to, yay, you are required to, put that up for public commentary. You must give notice
mm-hmm.
and take comments,
mm-hmm.
and you are required to do so. There have been quite a few administrative actions that have been completely undone because of the lack of the comment, notice and comment period. It takes a lot of time to unwind the damage and to figure that out at the far end, but it is something that does happen. Well, obviously, we know where the U.S. Patent Office comes down on this. The people currently in charge don't want this process to be there. And who knows, maybe we're just yelling into the void, but up until December the 3rd, we can still register our dissatisfaction, which I have done. I encourage you all to do it, to say something, to say, hey, look, for people like normal people, not only should it be even less money, if you're going to change something, make it even less money than $23,000. But also, number two, we need to have more people, more eyes on these things, not fewer eyes. And that just keeps people from looking at it. So, gamers, we've done great things in the past, especially when it involves internet comment forms. And we must do so again. Keyboard warriors everywhere, we must unite and let them know we've only got this. Take the holiday weekend. Say that this is gunk and they need to not do that. I've got at least one big example of the Inter Partes review working well, and it's near and dear to my heart. And that was Personal Audio LLC back in 2014 claimed that it had invented podcasting. It had been issued a patent for podcasting, and then it had started demanding royalties from podcasters. Podcasters who, it should be noted, a group of people that always have plenty of money to be filing lawsuits. But the ability for somebody to call shenanigans and request a review is what happened. They used the Inter Partes review process shortly after that patent was granted and got it bounced. And it didn't require hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars spent on lawyers. Did it cost way too much money? Objectively, yes. However, it is something that's been used to benefit us in very real ways in the past, and I would hate to see this taken away. So, last plug. You have to go to the Patent and Trade Offices thing. I'll include a link in this episode as well so that you can go there and you can fill out why you dislike it and why it's short-sighted to change this, because it takes that ability away from us normal folk. And that's what's important here.
If we can take action on things and actually feel like you're making some kind of a dent in the absolute absurd stream of nonsense coming at us these days, absolutely, mm-hmm. Do the thing.
Maybe you save our ability to challenge Nintendo's crazy patents when they try to patent something ridiculous. Patently ridiculous, perhaps. Who knows? That's just legalese for you. Thank you for coming on that journey.
Absolutely.
We just have one last thing left to do, and that is share with the people what we've been watching and what we've been playing. What have you been into?
Baldur's Gate 3 has taken over most of my free time with my husband.
Yes!
Because we've been playing, basically during normal times that we would be watching something, we've just been playing Baldur's Gate. So.
Nice.
That's primarily what I'm watching, or doing. But I have been playing Pathfinder, 2nd edition.
Hmm. How's that?
Very crunchy.
Mm.
And I'm struggling a little bit, but I'm figuring it out. It's just a lot of, there's a lot of possibilities in Pathfinder, and it helps to have a DM who knows what they're doing to be able to guide you. And my DM's very good, but she's also running a pre-written campaign, and she's struggling to read the campaign. So, I don't recommend this particular campaign we're doing. I'm not even going to mention it. But other than that, I've been playing GURPS as well with you. And
yeah,
that's been super fun. And then what I've been watching when I have time are things on Dropout, mostly. There's Make Some Noise. There's Dirty Laundry. And there's... what was the other new one that came? Oh, there was a stand-up special from one of their people.
Crowd Control,
I've also been watching. That's something else. But yes. No, Demi did his own stand-up special.
Well, I've got a little bit of overlap, obviously playing some GURPS. I have been playing some D&D. As you know, the spouse and I teach a class for the kids on the weekends. I've been watching a UK series called Ghosts.
Ooh.
Apparently, there's also a US version. I enjoy the UK version a lot. Haven't watched the US version. Also been watching some stuff on Dropout, like Gastronauts and such.
Mm, yes, also good. This is not something I've been watching recently because we binged it all, but there's a show called Last One Laughing UK edition, and it is Jimmy Carr is the host, and Jimmy Carr is amazing regardless. But it had Moss from IT Crowd,
Richard Iowate.
Yeah, I always struggle with his last name. And he, just him alone, like I would watch whatever. So yeah, I highly recommend it. It's over on Prime. We binged it in one night. It was like six episodes. It's pretty short, but it's amazing. I highly recommend it. You mentioned specifically UK versions of things, and apparently there's other versions of it. But that's the one I've seen, and it's primo.
We'll stick with the best, for sure. Well, thanks everybody for coming out to the show, for listening to episode 360. We look forward to having you join us hopefully next time. You can catch it at 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central on twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod if you want to watch the live series. And of course, on any podcast platform near you. But until we see you next Monday, be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy. Bye.
Bye.